The Oldie Lunch Recordings presents Simon Sebag Montefiore talking about his book, The Romanoffs, 1613 to 1918.
Our final speaker has an epic saga to relate of a country and an empire, a legend so great it spanned three centuries and encompassed scandal, madness and murder. But no, I must not continue. He must tell his story. Will you welcome the three and only Simon Sebag Montefiore?
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here. Great honour for you oldies to have me. James is an old friend of mine, so this is a bit of a reunion. Barry and I once indulged in a wild, orgiastic debate at the Cambridge Union, which ended with the police arriving and arresting several of us. So it's the first time I've seen him since. I'm glad you got out. And nice to see you. I'd prepared for today a very long, about 60-minute speech entitled The Development of the Russian State, Autocracy and Polish-Russian Relations in the 17th Century. And when I showed this to James Pembroke, he said, no, the only thing they want you to talk about is sex. So I've had to rip up my speech. I'm totally unprepared to talk about that subject. I've never spoken about anything that trivial before, but will you bear with me as I try to get through and penetrate this complex subject, the Romanov sex life. Perhaps I should just start by just saying, when you start a subject like the Romanovs, you might well say, doesn't everyone know everything there is to be said about the Romanovs already? And there are certain Romanovs we all know extremely well, Peter the Great, Catherine the Great, Nicholas and Alexander, and so on. But actually, there's no real history of the whole dynasty. And that's what I decided I wanted to write. I looked for it. I wanted to read it myself. And I slightly follow the dictum of my hero, Benjamin Disraeli, who always used to say, when I want to read a book, I write it. So in that spirit, I've written this book. And you might think everyone knows who these great historical figures are already. But to give you an idea of how little people know about some of the things you might take for granted, when I first started to write my first book on Russian leader Stalin, I was on tour in America, and I was in this huge shopping mall in Cleveland. And I was waiting to do my signing. And an American wearing giant shorts that you could have sheltered much of Russia inside announced over the loudspeaker to this huge Walmart and many other shops. She said, ladies and gentlemen, it's great to have you here. Today we're very proud to have in the house signing copies of his book, Joseph Stalin himself, signing copies of his book, Simon Montefiore. So That was an experience. So some people actually came up and said, can you sign the book, Mr. Stalin? And I had to explain that. When I started researching Russia, I found in the marketplace in Tbilisi in Georgia a giant oil painting of Joseph Stalin, the size of half that wall, the whole of that fireplace. In fact, it's one of the few investments I've ever made that has actually made money. I bought it for $300, and now it's apparently worth a lot of money. Anyway, I brought it back, and I was staying with my parents in the country, and I had it framed. And you've got to realize it's a picture of Stalin in a great coat, red epaulettes. He's got binoculars, and there are tanks in one side and giant combine harvesters threshing the wheat lands of the Ukraine behind. And he's standing there, and he's looking into the middle of the distance, unmistakable. But the picture framer, when he brought it back framed, he took it in to give it to my dad. And then he came out and he said, I love this picture. I can see the family resemblance with your dad. He must be so proud to have had a grandfather who was in the war. So I then realized that there were many people who don't know as much as you'd imagine about familiar historical characters. And so to the Romanovs. The most fascinating thing about writing about the sex life of people in the 17th century onwards is something that can never happen again in our own time. Because in the age of email, we will never again know what people are really saying to each other behind closed doors. And the letters that I use, this book is based on about five amazing correspondence. It's based on many, many documents, but it's based above all on about five amazing, outrageous, explicit correspondences between people who wrote down the most extraordinarily outrageous stuff in their letters and presumed, of course, that no one would ever read it again. Now, one of them was Peter the Great. He's a fascinating character that I love spending time on. Everything about him is larger than life, extraordinary. I mean, he was 6 foot seven. He was brilliant. He was a politician who knew what he wanted to do, had the ability to get it done, who could get it done. He modernized Russia. He made Russia a great power. He was also a total monster, a terrifying character. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, this book, you could just read it as a study of Russia. You could read it as a study of power. You could also read it as just an ordinary family saga, a family saga like yours or mine. You know, admittedly, it's a family in which, you know, fathers torture their sons to death. Wives have their husbands murdered and steal their thrones. Sons have their own fathers strangled upstairs while they wait downstairs. So a family, a familiar family of the sort we all know well in our own homes. Peter the Great tortured his own son to death. He was fascinated by putting things together, dismantling them. Guns, ships, people, human bodies. He was fascinated when he beheaded people himself, they sat up for a long time, for several seconds before falling down, and after their heads had come off. When he went to Holland, he attended the greatest doctors of the day doing dissections of bodies. And afterwards, he insisted on going up to the bodies and biting them with his teeth to see how dead flesh felt. I'm glad you've all eaten, by the way, because prepare yourselves. And he then sort of said, like, you know, I'd like to buy a full set of your surgical implements, knives and hammers and things. And he then looked round and he had a member of his entourage who had a sore toe. And so he simply amputated the man's foot. He had another person who had a sore arm. Off came the arm. So after that, if you were in Peter the Great's court and you had an ache or a pain somewhere or an aching leg or something, or you pulled a muscle, you didn't mention it to Peter the Great. But Peter could be absolutely brutal. At one point, the bodies of babies had been found around the Winter Palace, and no one knew who'd left them there. And it turned out that it was discovered that it was one of Peter's mistresses, Mary Hamilton, who obviously, by the sound of her name, you can imagine, is Scottish in origin. And so she was arrested and tortured, with Peter in attendance, even though she was an ex-mistress of his, even though she was the most gorgeous girl at his court, blonde, blue-eyed, fantastic figure, alabaster skin, the whole works. And he sentenced her to death for murdering these babies. She'd just got pregnant. She'd got repeatedly pregnant. As they said, we'd now call her a nymphomaniac, but in those days they simply said she was addicted much to gallantry. And gallantry was a euphemism for that. So he then walked with her to the gallows, and everyone in the crowd, the Russian crowd, waiting for this terrible execution, were convinced that she was his wife's lady-in-waiting, she was his mistress. She would, of course, be pardoned at the last minute. She walked up there wearing a beautiful white dress, her hair flowing, the crowd went silent. She walked up there, and when she was up there, he whispered in her ear, and they thought, this is it, this is the pardon. But no, he in fact whispered, you're going to die for killing these children and these babies. And she fainted and was beheaded. And then Peter the Great, in a very Peter the Great action, picked up the head. They said it was the most gorgeous head they'd ever seen. He picked it up and he showed it to the crowd like this, holding it by the hair that he'd often held, when they were in bed together, when they were lovers. And he held it up and he said, well, I've got you here. I'm going to give you an anatomy lesson. And so he said, I just want to show you, because I've learned anatomy and you should know it too. This is the windpipe. This is the aorta. Here's the spinal cord. Even the Russian crowd gasped in horror, accustomed as they were to the most ghastly and bestial and diabolical of punishments. And he then kissed the lips of the head, tossed it in a bin, and said, now I'm going off to work. So that gives you an idea of the terrifyingness of Peter the Great. Because I've got one more minute, and I promised sex, not violence, and he's actually just told me to get the sex in fast, I'm going to jump about 200 years to my favorite emperor, Alexander II. He and his mistress, Princess Katya Dolgorukaya, have written the most sexually explicit correspondence ever written, I think, by a head of state in all of history. Even in the age of sexting and texting, this correspondence holds the power to shock. When it was serialized here in the Mail on Sunday, the editors there rang me up and said, Simon, we just simply can't publish this stuff in a tabloid newspaper. This is a family newspaper, and we can't do that. When I came home every day reading this stuff to my wife, she said, are you making it up? Is this really what you're doing all day, reading this outrageous stuff? There are sexual acts in this correspondence that I thought hadn't been invented until the last couple of years. But in fact, these are from the 1860s and 1870s. And let me just finish by saying, when you read the book, if you read it, skip to that chapter if you get a little bored somewhere along the lines of Peter the Great and Catherine the Great. Skip to that chapter. In the correspondence, they call sex bingley. So if you just look up in the index bingley and skip that. If you can find the act that I'm referring to in the book that I thought hadn't been invented until the last couple of years, please send me a Facebook message and you'll get a free copy for your dad or your children. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
The Oldie Magazine Recordings. This is a Radio Gorgeous production for The Oldie 2015.